Hello, I'm David Crowe. Thank you for tuning in to episode 156 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. Email me at david.crowe@theinfectiousmyth.com. That's Crowe with an E. Join the discussion and like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at infectiousmyth. Listen every Tuesday at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time here on prn.fm, or download the MP3 after broadcast on iTunes or other podcast aggregators. You can listen to any of the last 5 episodes over the phone by dialing the U.S. phone number 701-719-0990. We have a really long and interesting interview today, so let's get right to it. Sinhan Li graduated as an MD from Wuhan Medical College in China. After a residence and fellowship at Cornell New York Hospital and Memorial Hospital for Cancer, Dr. Li was certified by the American Board of Pathology and obtained the FRCPC degree by examination in 1966. He was on the faculty of McGill University, then Yale University from 1968 to 2004 while practicing hospital-based pathology. He is currently the director of Milford Molecular Diagnostics in Milford, Connecticut. He has developed and published routine Sanger sequencing-based diagnostic methods for HPV, human papillomavirus, Neisseria gonorrhea, Chlamydia trachomatis, Lyme disease borreliae, and BRCA1/2 mutations implementable in community hospital laboratories. Welcome to the show, Dr. Li.
Thank you for having me in the show.
It's a great pleasure. On January the 14th, 2016, you wrote a letter to Dr. Margaret Chan, Director General of the World Health Organization, entitled "Allegations of Scientific Misconduct by GACVS, WHO, CDC representatives, and others, an open letter of complaint to the Director General of the World Health Organization, Dr. Margaret Chan." Let's deal with one of those abbreviations. GACVS is the Global Advisory Committee on Vaccine Safety. They approved the HPV vaccine for world use, I believe. Is that true?
Yes, correct.
And so why do you think this approval was corrupt?
You mean the approval of what? Of the vaccine?
Yeah, so GACVS approved the HPV vaccine for global use, but you're complaining that this was not a proper approval. What do you think was wrong with their approval?
I'm a pathologist. I've been doing cervical cancer screening for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that cervical cancer in women is not a crisis. In general, in the United States, also probably in Canada too,
right,
among 100,000 women, the death rate caused by cervical cancer is about 1.7 person.
Per 100,000?
Yeah, 1.7.
How does that compare to, say, breast cancer or lung cancer?
Yeah, that's enormous. For lung cancer, I don't know, but for breast cancer, probably at 40,000 a year, something like that. Yeah, I don't know the exact figure. I published it, but you can quote me.
Yeah.
But it's really, very minimal. Okay.
So cervical cancer, I understood it was a few hundred deaths a year in the United States out of, 300 million some odd people.
The statistics is about less than 4,000 deaths in the United States.
Oh, okay, 4,000. Okay, that's a bit more than
that. Less than 4,000. And most of these people are new immigrants, or the immigration person from Mexico. And these women have never seen a gynecologist in their life.
So they have not had the, like, regular pap screens?
Right. And in fact, that an American woman,
mm-hmm,
if she is cared by a gynecologist regularly, should, mm-hmm, not die of cervical cancer at all. Yeah, should not have cervical cancer. So that the cervical cancer is a disease of the women who have never been screened, have never been, or they don't go to see a gynecologist.
Right.
And then they found cancer. So that's a preventable, the most preventable cancer
is cervical cancer. So let's get back to GA-CVS. So when did they approve HPV, or when did they recommend that it be used globally?
In the United States, it was in 2006 and officially approved.
Mm-hmm.
In Canada, I don't know, maybe a few years later.
But GA-CVS is the Global Advisory Committee, so presumably they advise the World Health Organization, is that correct?
Right, correct. Right.
And do you know when they did that? Was it around 2016 or before you're close to your letter?
Yeah, they had they had a duty to advise the WHO whether the vaccine was safe to use or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they have always maintained the vaccine is safe. There's no problem. But I do think there's a problem. The vaccine is just like a drug.
Right.
When you use it, you have to weigh the risks.
Right.
And the benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the problem is for vaccination on HPV, they recommend the vaccinees to be about age 12.
Right.
Young girls, adolescent girls, right. And to prevent a cancer which may occur at age 54.
There
are 40 years down the road.
Right.
And in between, there are a lot of things you can do to prevent cervical cancer rather than vaccine.
Right.
And then the cervical cancer is a disease of a grandmother's age.
Right.
And it can be prevented.
Right.
And a vaccine injury, caused by the HPV vaccination occurs at age about 12 year old, right?
Right. So you're saying that if a 12-year-old girl gets the HPV vaccine and is injured, you know, even if that girl would have had cervical cancer at the age of 50 or 60 or 70, you've still taken 40 years or 50 years of their life in terms of a healthy life. Now, one of your concerns with the HPV vaccine is the fact that it contains aluminum, which is bound to the viral DNA. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. See, the reason is that in the HPV vaccines, they depend on a protein called virus-like particle, the protein.
Mm-hmm.
And that is this outer surface protein of the virus.
Right.
And they use that protein to immunize immunize the girls,
right?
The human being, then hopefully to produce antibody,
right?
In the body against the virus. Okay. So, however, the antigenicity of this protein is very low. It doesn't cause a lot of immune response.
Antigenicity means the ability of the, like you stated, I guess, the ability of this protein to produce a strong immune response. And you're saying it's very low.
It's very low. So therefore, they need a booster.
Mm-hmm.
A booster. It's called adjuvant, aluminum adjuvant.
Right.
Yeah? And aluminum adjuvants have many forms. And they found out most of them don't work. And there's only a patented, a very special aluminum adjuvant. It's called AAHS.
Right.
Merck company has the patent on it. Okay.
Right.
And only this type of aluminum adjuvant would work with HPV vaccine to produce a very high level of antibody. Yeah. And in a sustained period. To maintain a long period of antibody in the body.
Right.
And they did not know why it was so effective. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And only the aluminum effect on vaccinology in vaccines was only discovered in 2011. Yeah? Or they knew about it, but officially was published in 2010 or 2011. Okay.
How aluminum causes a stronger immune reaction?
Right. Immunity, right.
Mm-hmm.
So different aluminum adjuvant act differently ineffectiveness. Okay, and this, and it depends on free DNA. The aluminum can bind the DNA, and the aluminum DNA would get into the macrophages. Yeah.
So the macrophages are white blood cells that are a critical part of the immune system.
Right, the antigen-producing antibody, the antibody cells in the body.
Right.
So when the foreign DNA get into the cell, okay, that will stimulate the immune response tremendously. Okay.
Right.
So it depends. So normally, when they vaccinate a person, it depends on the aluminum damage these cells at the site of injection. Yeah. For example, when you have vaccination in the muscle, okay, you always cause pain, right?
Right.
The site of injection is painful.
And that's normal and not considered.
That's normal. That's normal. That's due to inflammation, and the inflammation is due to damage of the aluminum adjuvant. So it's a metal, right?
Right.
The metal damage the cells and it causes inflammation. And your normal cells, the macrophages and the muscle cells, when they die, they release their own DNA, right? Like from our own cells. See, your own cells is your own cells DNA would combine with aluminum,
right?
And together, this aluminum DNA compound would get into the macrophages and stimulate the immune response, cause the lymphocytes to produce antibody. Okay, that's a normal procedure when you do that. However, in HPV vaccines, because the protein antigen is so weak,
right?
Yeah, it depends on another DNA. It's a viral DNA. Yeah, and they did not know about it, or they know that I don't know. It depends. It actually needs a viral DNA to get into the cell with aluminum to produce a very strong immune reaction. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So if I can try to restate that, so you're saying that the viral DNA, which is part of the production, it's in the vaccine, is
right.
bound to the aluminum in the vaccine. And
right.
so when the macrophages carry the aluminum around the body, they're carrying the viral DNA around. And
right.
is that what's causing the strong immune reaction?
Right, that's correct. You see, because the macrophages recognizes their own DNA, the body, the human DNA, or the viral DNA.
Mm-hmm.
They realize that these are invaders. Yeah,
right.
These are foreign. These are bad guys. I got to
right.
mount a very strong immune reaction, right? Cause a lot of inflammation to counter this invader.
Right.
Right? It's not my own DNA. So the response is tremendous, very, very hard. And as a result of this response, and then the inflammatory cytokine, when the cells talking to each other,
right.
They secrete some substance. It's called cytokines. One
right.
cell tells the other cells what to do and how much to do, right?
Right.
That kind of thing. So the macrophages secrete these cytokines and tell the lymphocytes, now we are not dealing with our own DNA. We are dealing with a viral DNA now, right?
Right.
And you've got to do a very strong reaction to counter them. And in this process, you cause a lot of damage. Yeah.
Right. So I mean, most children, of course, receive the HPV vaccine and don't have serious adverse reactions. So in the children where the vaccine's not causing a serious adverse reaction, you're saying that it's setting up for a very strong reaction against certain strains of HPV.
Right. So
right.
you need a very strong reaction to
okay.
produce antibody against the HPV virus.
Right. So
because the reason is that in a normal infection, when a woman is infected with HPV infection in the cervix, the woman does not produce antibody usually.
Right.
And for example, if you have hepatitis, right, then you have antibody against hepatitis viruses,
mm-hmm.
right? Or you checked antibody on it as a result of the hepatitis. But in HPV infection, you don't have antibody against the HPV virus
right.
in the blood. So you, therefore, you need a booster,
right.
an adjuvant booster, to tell the body to increase the immune response. Now, in this increased immune response, it does not hurt everybody in a severe way. Somebody
right.
has pain and some headache, and be over.
Right.
But in certain genetically predisposed person,
mm-hmm.
Something serious that may happen. It's not everybody happening. It will have this serious effect, but it could be maybe 2 or 3%.
Right. I mean, if 100% of the people who received HPV got sick afterwards, obviously it would have been taken off the market. But if it's 1 out of 1,000 or 1 out of maybe a serious adverse reactions, less than that, then it can fly under the radar with people saying, well, maybe that specific adverse reaction wasn't due to HPV. What kinds of adverse reactions following HPV vaccination are you familiar with?
Well, the most common thing is it's a headache and low blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctors advise all the girls who have been vaccinated to stay in the office for 15 to 20 minutes before
mm-hmm.
they leave the office. Because it's very often they have a so-called syncope. Suddenly drop of blood pressure and they fainted and may fall down, may hurt themselves.
Right.
That's
right.
very common.
Mm-hmm.
That's very common. And that may not be very serious, right? And then the serious effect is according to the FDA documents, they call serious adverse events.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they call serious adverse events per 100 person is about 2 to 3 person would have that. Okay, they classify as a serious events. So among 100 vaccinated girls, probably you have 2 to 3% would have the serious reaction.
Right.
What's considered serious strokes are hospitalization,
mm-hmm,
right? Go to
mm-hmm.
the emergency room, okay?
Right.
And the loss of schooling, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Continue visiting doctors' offices because of pain and cannot move.
Mm-hmm.
It needs rehabilitation or die, you know, or
right.
suddenly death. Right? Okay?
Yes.
Some of the girls may die in sleep under the shower, in the bathtub, and this happened. You
right.
know? Not very often, but it happens.
Yes.
Yeah? So this is 2 to 3% of the people have that. And this is documented in the prescription insert.
Right. And I guess since nobody reads the prescription insert, but if you go to court, the drug company will tell you that it's been published and it's public knowledge and you should have known about
right.
this.
Right, you should know that if you take the vaccine, you should know that there is 2 to 3%, 2 to 5% such risk involved.
That's a pretty substantial risk. I mean, if you consider that half the population of the United States is female, and I don't know what percentage are in the target range of like 12 to 20, that's millions of girls, young women, who, and 2 to 3% of that is a lot of. Is a lot of damage,
and also the degree of the damage. If you make an A student to C student, to me, is already
yes.
a great damage.
That's true. I mean, I've seen information about these young women whose lives have been completely destroyed. But there are probably some who are just struggling afterwards. Their life's not completely destroyed, but it's affected in a significant way. And like you say, if you were an A student, but now you have trouble concentrating, or sometimes you faint, or things like that, it might not completely turn your life upside down, but it might derail your you know, your idea.
Your career,
of,
maybe.
Your career, yes. Yes. You might
yeah,
not.
That is already very
that's severe, yes.
To the girl.
Yeah, I'm not trying to minimize it. I'm just saying that even a less serious, even something that's not like life-threatening or that leaves you at home all the time could derail your desire to, say, be a doctor or an engineer when
right.
you're grown up. You wrote a paper with the title Detection of Human Papilloma Virus L1 Gene DNA Fragments in Postmortem Blood and Spleen After Gardasil Vaccination, a Case Report. What did you find in that paper, and what's its significance?
Right, the paper, you see, is that in the New Zealand, in this New Zealand girl,
mm-hmm.
so before I got very interested in that, and in Connecticut, there was one girl who lost her eyesight permanently
mm-hmm.
after vaccine injection.
Mm-hmm.
So optic nerve damage, optic neuritis is very common complication
mm-hmm.
After HPV vaccination. So that got my interest in it, in the subject.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then this New Zealand girl who died in sleep 6 months after the third dose of Gardasil injection, and the court ordered that a sample of the blood and the spleen after autopsy send it to me for test.
Okay.
Yeah, because I developed the most sensitive, accurate test for HPV DNA for clinical use.
Okay. That was why it was sent to you and not somebody else. Okay.
Yeah, that's why, based on my publication, though the court sent it to me for test.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I found out that in this girl's blood and spleen, and there was a residue of HPV DNA in the blood, in the blood sample and in the spleen sample. And because of this HPV DNA, 16 DNA, was in so-called non-B conformation, it's a little bit different from the ordinary HPV DNA you find in infected women's
mm-hmm.
cervix. You know, the reason what's non-B conformation, that means the DNA may have a knot
mm-hmm.
somewhere, a double-stranded DNA. If you have a knot there,
right.
the enzyme cannot degrade it. Yeah.
Right.
Normally, in a healthy person, if a viral DNA, free DNA, gets into your blood and my blood and any healthy woman's blood, free DNA cannot remain in the blood for
right.
very long, because our enzyme, the DNA enzyme, as you will chop them up and excrete them
mm-hmm.
from into the urine quickly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Our system would not allow free DNA floating in our blood for very long.
Right, right. That makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Right. So if I find a DNA in the blood specimen. Autopsy material, post-mortem material.
Mm-hmm.
So DNA there, usually the viral DNA is in non-B conformation. That
mm-hmm.
means the ordinary enzyme cannot chop them out. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Cannot chop it out. So that is why it has to come from the vaccine. Yeah,
not
from natural enzyme.
Right.
Not
and
from
how
natural enzyme.
How do you think that contributed to her death?
Okay. I think that the death is not only in her death, in all the sudden young women who die unexpectedly in sleep. Yeah, usually all these deaths, sudden death, unexplained death in young ladies, in young young boy or young girls,
mm-hmm.
Were due to heart disease, the heart, atrial fibrillation, or the heart. Does not beat normally,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Usually the cardiac origin, Okay. The reason is that one of the cytokines, the macrophage is secreted to tell the other lymphocytes to respond, to produce antibody. There's one of them is called tumor necrosis alpha.
Mm-hmm.
And this is myocardial depressant. Yeah. And this was found in maybe 20, 30 years ago, because the tumor necrosis factor, initially they injected the BCG into the bladder. The BCG is the tuberculosis vaccine, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They inject it, it causes inflammation in the urinary bladder to cause the urinary bladder cancer to disappear in those days, right?
Right.
And they found it's called tumor necrosis factor.
Okay.
Okay. And at one point at Memorial Hospital in New York, they tried to use this tumor necrosis factor to treat cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's causing tumor to necrose, to die.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Tumor necrosis factor. And they thought it was good. But they found that it had myocardial depression effect. And the patient may die of hypotension when you use this tumor necrosis factor to treat cancer. Right?
Right. So the person dies of heart disease when
right.
you're trying
instead
to treat cancer. Yes.
Right. So the complications too big to take the risk on, right? So they stopped that, and then I knew about this. So when these people die, so most likely it's the macrophages, yeah, containing this viral DNA with the aluminum, and they travel. When you have the macrophages in the body, it can travel to the heart, to the brain, and anywhere they can travel.
Yes,
to,
yes,
right?
Yes.
When they travel, and you don't know where they aggregated.
Mm-hmm,
yeah,
mm-hmm.
They may form a group, aggregate in the muscle.
Right. Right.
Or in the brain. If in the brain, they cause encephalomyelitis.
Right.
Yeah, cause
mm-hmm,
inflammation
mm-hmm.
in the brain. If you go to the heart, and they cause myocardial infarct, necrosis. Yeah. So that's myocardial damage.
Right.
Is probably one of the most plausible causes. Yeah. After the HPV vaccination and the patient died.
Right.
Suddenly, unexpectedly.
Right.
Yeah.
In 2014, there was a Japanese expert inquiry into the HPV vaccine. And was this concern about the viral DNA part of this inquiry?
Yeah, I presented this as a plausible explanation. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
To explain the cause of death to the court. Yeah,
right.
But the court, as you know, the court would not rule against the vaccine manufacturer. Yeah, that's very usual. It's very difficult.
Yes.
To rule to legally, yeah,
to
rule against the vaccine company.
Right.
But nobody has refuted this theory, because my finding that the HPV vaccine do contain the residue of HPV DNA fragments. The FDA agreed to it, because I detected the signature sequence of the HPV in the vaccine. So there's no dispute as to my finding.
Well, what about the, you mentioned in your letter, you mentioned the thesis of Dr. Patousis Harris, who I believe works for the CDC. What have people said about her thesis and her experiments, and what's the truth about the work that she did while she was presumably getting her PhD or something?
Which doctor? This
Patousis Harris.
Oh, Patousis Harris. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, Patousis Harris. Okay. Patousis Harris actually did not have experience in vaccine research or HPV research at all. She did not. But she is on a committee which will promote HPV vaccination in New Zealand. And
okay.
she did not like what I'm saying, my publication. Yeah, so she wrote a blog somewhere on the social blog against my testimony in court.
Right.
Right. In court. And when this committee, the WHO committee, they want to find someone against me to testify against me in Tokyo, in the Tokyo meeting. and they couldn't find anybody else. So Dr. Petrusis Harris was the only person they found, you know, who said something against me.
Right.
So that's why they asked her to come to testify.
Right, but what was the basis of what she was saying against you?
Yeah, the basis, actually, she didn't have the basis on that. She just said she didn't believe what I'm saying, what my work. But she did not write a scientific rebuttal. Like usually in science, if you publish a paper, okay, and you don't agree, you find some flaws, scientific flaws, in the scientific paper, okay? And you will write to the editor
right.
to point out where were the flaws.
Right.
But she did not do that, right? So the so basically, she didn't have any basis, but she would try to make up. She tried to make up something.
But it was based on what she made up, in your words, was based on her thesis, you said in the letter. And what did her thesis find?
Right. Her thesis actually did not say anything against me, against it. I forgot what the problem was, but you know, she didn't touch the problem.
What you said was her statement was not about HPV L1 VLPs. And you said that she claimed that these papers, I think they're referring to your paper and a paper by Tom Genovic and Shaw, these papers claimed an association with clinical events of an inflammatory nature, including cerebral vasculitis. And she said that was a false claim.
The cerebral vasculitis was reported in a case report in Connecticut, when I presented the case, and actually there was another doctor from Connecticut to present the encephalitis case causing blindness in a girl after HPV infection.
Okay.
After HPV vaccination.
Okay, these are the words of Dr. Helen Petrusis Harris. Okay, I do not know if I am an expert on this, but I certainly have some experience in considering aluminum in vaccines and its role in inflammatory responses and local AEFI, I don't know what that is, as part of my PhD some years ago. I assume you are referring to the VLP tightly bound to the adjuvant and the Shaw and Tomljanovic hypothesis that it suddenly finds its way to the brain carried by macrophages. So can you define AEFI and VLP and then talk about this statement?
Yeah, she did not say anything against the DNA combined with aluminum causing encephalitis. She did not say that.
And she did not study that in her PhD
thesis?
No, she
did not say it at all, no.
Okay.
She might have something against Chris Shaw's paper, but she did not have anything against DNA combined with aluminum transfected into macrophages and
okay.
causing local inflammation. So she did not have experience on that at all. She did not say that.
And another document you reference is a CDC, Centers for Disease Control, technical report on HPV, and you commented that this was the only technical report in their 12 years of publication, or the 12 years that you could find, that has not also been published in a peer-reviewed journal. And it was written by a work group, and it said that this is not claimed as a position of the CDC. So why is this significant?
They did not review my paper.
Mm-hmm.
They reviewed Chris Shaw's paper, right? And they said their paper is no good.
Right.
But they put my paper together, say this paper, put my paper in a basket, saying my paper was incorrect. And yet they did not have a committee to report it. They should give a few phone call conversation to make that decision.
So are you saying that their technical report did not mention your paper, or that it dismissed your paper as not?
They did not mention my paper at all, but they grouped my paper together. They reviewed Apple. But they put orange into the same basket and said that oranges are no good.
Okay, so you're saying they didn't mention your paper, but they put it in a basket with other papers. I'm not quite sure I understand what they did.
Right, they actually did not say my paper. I think in my letter I already mentioned that. They put the, they claim they have a committee.
Right.
To review all the evidence, okay, including my paper. But they did not say my paper.
Okay, so in the technical report itself, your paper was not mentioned.
Right. But they review only the protein, but they did not review the DNA. My work was based on DNA.
Right.
And Chris Saw's work was based on protein.
Right.
Okay. So they have said review against the protein. They says, but they never mentioned about DNA. But they put my paper together, saying my paper was also discredited.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of one of these move things around quickly, and people won't notice. So talk about the protein, and then claim that somehow makes invalidates your work, even though your work wasn't about proteins at all. And if you do it quickly enough, people don't notice what's been
done. Most people don't read about the references.
Right. I mean, you have to in a document like that. It's the references that are not included that are probably more important. I mean, it's like when people put together. You have people on one side who put together a list of papers that claim vaccines don't cause autism, and they collect all the papers which support that position. And then you have other people with a list of papers that show a connection between vaccines and autism. And, of course, they don't reference the papers that show the opposite. So you need somebody to look at both sides and say which side is right.
Right. So that's why they lump together. Basically, they already decided the vaccine had no side effect at all.
Right.
So they want to dismiss everything.
Right. And so if you can't
criticize everybody, but they don't distinguish different articles.
Right.
That's a problem. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, they should address if there is an article that claims that the HPV vaccine can cause adverse effects. They should specifically address it and explain why it's not correct. Now, another paper that we've kind of referenced, Chris Shaw and is it Lisa Chom? I cannot never pronounce her name. Chom Genovic. They wrote a paper called "Death After Quadrivalent Human Papillomavirus Vaccination: Causal or Coincidental," and a lot of people didn't like that paper. So, can you describe what that paper says?
No, I don't. I'm not fully familiar with other people's work.
Okay.
I wouldn't comment on that.
Right, but I guess we can say that Shaw and Tom Genovic are both aluminum experts, and so they were also considering the impact of aluminum, but as you say, maybe not the relationship
DNA. I agree with their work in terms of aluminum maybe playing a role in causing side effects. But the role of aluminum side effect here, I think it's via the HPV DNA. Yeah.
So right.
The toxicity of aluminum is debatable, right?
Yes.
People argue about it, whether aluminum is a toxic substance or not in the blood, causing direct toxic effect or not. Aluminum combined with DNA,
mm-hmm.
inducing high immune response, much higher immune response, is not debatable.
Okay, you
it's a fact.
Right. You would agree. I mean, Chris Shaw, who I interviewed before, told me that aluminum is an element that is not present in any human biological systems. Is that true? Or do you know that?
It's probably true. These metals don't exist in a significant amount in our body.
Right. I mean, there are some proteins that have copper in them, for example. There are a few metals that are involved in our body, but not very many. And,
right,
and
right.
He said that aluminum has no biological role.
Aluminum has no known physiological benefit.
Right. And I guess that's similar to mercury, which can right. also become biologically active, like methylmercury and ethyl right. mercury are biologically active and can do a lot of damage.
Right.
And so it's something similar. Also, you say that aluminum is taken up by the macrophages, and the macrophages tend to clump together, right? So they're not the aluminum is not going to be evenly distributed around the body. Is that fair to say?
Right. It was discovered by a group of Japanese researchers in 2003 that aluminum can combine DNA as a nanoparticles. Transfected into the macrophages.
Mm-hmm.
The transfection means that the DNA gets into a living cell. Okay. So when you have a free DNA, the free DNA may be outside the macrophages, maybe inside the macrophages. The free DNA can be degraded quickly, being chopped up by the enzymes and mm-hmm. get rid of it quickly. But when the free DNA molecules bind to the aluminum, why the DNA bind to aluminum? Because the DNA has a phosphate backbone, right? The DNA has one sugar, one base,
right?
Yeah, and one phosphate,
right?
Okay, the phosphate can bind aluminum very tightly.
Oh.
Through our ligand exchange, okay, and that is a solid compound, a very stable chemical,
right?
And it cannot dissolve
mm-hmm,
easily. Mm-hmm. Now, in the lab, if you put aluminum and the DNA together, it precipitated. It become precipitated in the test tube.
Okay, it cannot
be dissolved.
Right, so it's not going to break up, and if it broke up, then the DNA would be disposed of, and you just have the aluminum
right.
to worry about. But it
but
doesn't
once
break
the
up.
Once the aluminum binds the DNA becomes not degradable.
Right, right.
You understand? So, so when the aluminum brings the DNA to the macrophages, the DNA would act as a long-term stimulator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They never get rid of the body has no mechanism to get rid of the aluminum DNA. Anthracnidosis. The people working in the mine, right?
Yes.
And you suck a lot of the dust, silica,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right? And in the lung, when the people die at autopsy and the lymph node in the lung, you still have a lot of silica, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is anthrax.
Right.
This is carbon particles and the silica, right, from the coal mine.
Right.
Stay in the lung, in the lymph node forever.
Right. They cannot be gotten rid of. And I can imagine that when the vaccine manufacturers discovered that the aluminum and DNA, I mean, did they know that the aluminum bound the viral DNA?
They should know it because this is chemistry. It's simple chemistry.
I can see them being quite excited because this would mean that you had long-term immunity, not thinking about the possible negative consequences of this.
Right. I think that I wrote a few articles and asked people, because people, they do not like the idea, my discovery.
Right.
Of that the free viral DNA is in... insoluble precipitate in the vaccine.
Yes.
And I found DNA in the insoluble part of the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And the insoluble part, the only insoluble part in the vaccine is the aluminum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the vaccine, everything else can be soluble, right?
Right.
It's
so
insoluble.
So when
except aluminum.
Right. So when you inject HPV vaccine, the aluminum particles bound to DNA. Are going to cause inflammation, and they're going to be gobbled up by macrophages, which are then going to carry them around the body. That's the basic process.
Right. So stay for a long, long time in the body.
Right.
So the vaccination usually, nowadays, people expect how the aluminum works. when you have aluminum in the vaccine, you inject it into the muscle. Okay.
Right.
How the aluminum works is the aluminum has to wait for the human DNA to be released, and they carry the human DNA into the macrophages. It's called damage-associated molecular pattern.
Mm-hmm.
They call it. You look it up. In my letter, I mentioned about it too.
Yes.
DAMP, the damage-associated molecular pattern.
Right.
And this kind of DNA carried by the macrophages, carried by the aluminum into the macrophages, would stimulate a normal process of immune response to antibody boosting. And that is the normal process of vaccination, the mechanism.
Right.
Now, in HPV DNA, you don't have to wait that, because you have already got the viral DNA bound to the aluminum in the vaccine itself.
Okay.
So the DNA, the viral DNA is available instantaneously when you inject the vaccine into the body.
Okay, well, let me see if I can try to restate this, because these are very complicated concepts. So you're saying in an earlier vaccine with aluminum, the aluminum is not bound to DNA, and so when you inject the aluminum into the body with the vaccine, it takes time to bind to human DNA, which then gets circulated around the body. But in this case, it's already pre-bound to the viral DNA, so you don't need to wait. As soon as macrophage takes up the aluminum, it takes up the viral DNA as well.
Right. When you inject it, the viral DNA is available right there with aluminum, and get to the macrophages. So I think that causes almost instant reaction in the body.
Right.
When you get to the heart, then you cause atrial fibrillation, arrhythmia of the heart.
Okay.
Cause hypotension.
One of the things you said in your letter regarding the 2014 Japanese expert inquiry was that one of their own experts, and I'm not sure if you're talking about the GACVS, showed scientific evidence that HPV vaccination does increase cytokines, including tumor necrosis factor, TNF, particularly at the injection site, as compared to other vaccines. Yet they chose to suppress this information at the public hearing. Can you expound on that?
Right. And okay. That was because Dr. Petosis Harris' initial presentation was that there was no cytokine, no excessive cytokine produced in the vaccine. But one of the Japanese researchers at that meeting showed evidence, said, no, there's actually more harmful cytokines being produced in HPV vaccine than other vaccine.
Right.
Okay, and they suppressed it. Yeah. They
knew that the statement by Petosis Harris was wrong.
Was wrong.
But they allowed it to stand throughout the meeting, and it didn't come out until afterwards.
Right. They suppressed it. The Japanese, actually, their expert. That was their expert. Yeah,
right.
The Japanese expert. The Japanese expert came out with the evidence to say pertussis was wrong.
Right.
But they suppressed the other one, the Japanese. So that is the problem.
Okay. And Petosis Harris, I think I said earlier, works for the CDC, but that's not true. She works for a New Zealand health organization, I presume.
Right. But now she becomes a member of this vaccine safety committee now. She's rewarded.
So she's a member of GACVS.
Right. No, you look it up. She's a member now. She's rewarded with a new position in the WHO.
I'm sure that is very profitable for her. So GACVS is actually part of the World Health Organization. So presumably it's set up to advise the upper body about which vaccines to approve.
Right. Yeah, which is safety, right.
In your experience dealing with people, do you think that a lot of people like Petosis Harris, other members of GACVS, see it as their role to promote vaccines as opposed to take a balanced view and look at that, like you talked about the safety benefit ratio. Do you think they see their job as to get vaccines approved as opposed to decide which ones are safe and effective?
Yeah, I think the most people in these committees have some connection with the industry. It's very often on the revolving door situation, right? So they come back and forth between industry and government advising committee. And they have a career to promote. These people's careers are built on promoting certain agenda, right? So vaccine is one of those agendas, right, in their career.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that if you're top management of a drug company that produces vaccines and one of your scientists enables one of your vaccines to get approved for use around the world, that you would be very happy and that you would want to reward that person financially and in other ways.
Right. See, for example, HPV vaccine was recommended by Dr. Gerberding when she was director of the CDC.
Right.
Right. And now, after she retired, she became the vice president of Merck. And her income jumped up to probably 20 times, and she just sold a few, some kind of milk stocks, got a few $1 million 2 years ago, right?
Yes, I don't think that Dr. Gerberding has to worry about what's going to happen when she stops working, if she ever does.
Right, so that's one example, you know. Mm-hmm. So as mentioned on the letter, unfortunately, there are people like that, and we have to watch out.
I understand. We don't have a lot of time left. One other person I wanted to mention was a blogger, Professor David Gorski. Do you want to describe his role in this thing?
I think he's one of the character assassins. So he's looking up people he didn't like it. He didn't like the message. So he can kill the messenger. It's a character assassination to damage the reputation. That's all.
So did he try to damage your reputation? What did he say about you that was damaging, if people believed it?
He's writing on the blogs. I usually don't read those. Some of the people show me. And he said my test was no good. And I was fired by the hospital, which was correct. You know, the hospital didn't like it. Once your label is anti-vaxxer, and, you know, the university and the hospital didn't like it. So it took me 3 years of a lawsuit to regain my reputation. Yeah. So if people find you have no flaw in your work, they find some other excuses to.
I think people must be very naive to think that if you get fired by an institution, it necessarily means you've done something wrong or you're incompetent. I mean, certainly there are incompetent and corrupt people who get fired by institutions, but institutions also fire people because they find something that the institution doesn't like.
Right. I'm used to that because, I was grew up in China, and I had a lot of these kind of things in my personal life. So I'm used to it. I had enough resources to sue the hospital to win my position back. See, as a doctor, it's easy to kill the doctor's career if you fire for a hospital. Because
yes.
Once you get fired at a hospital, you lose your license, right? So...
Yes.
I had to clear my name, but it took me 3 years of lawsuit to clear my name.
Right.
But not many people could do that, but I'm very lucky to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, those things are kind of like a show trial because other younger doctors look at it and say, gee, you know, if that happens to me, first of all, I might not win my lawsuit. I might not be able to afford a lawsuit. And if I lose my lawsuit, I'm going to be working at McDonald's or something, right?
Right.
My medical degree is going to be completely worthless if this happens. And so a lot of people will say, well, I guess my concerns aren't that important. My family has to come first, and my career.
Right.
And a lot of people, I think, make that decision.
Right. It's a self-censorship.
Yes, it's very powerful. And it's funny that you say, you know, coming from China, which, you know, during the Cultural Revolution and still,
right.
I think today, there's a lot of self-censorship that occurs. Okay, we've come close to the end of our time. Is there anything else you'd like to say about this letter or about the HPV vaccine before we close?
One thing is that we don't have a cervical cancer crisis in the United States.
Right.
So it's one of the least important cervical cancer among women. And that can be totally prevented by improved gynecological care.
So the PAP, you're talking about the PAP smear mostly?
Yeah, PAP smear or HPV screening or
right.
to improve health care,
mm-hmm.
gynecological care.
Mm-hmm.
So no one should die of cervical cancer in the United States. Yeah.
Right.
If any woman has suffered cervical cancer, invasive cervical cancer, it's a potential malpractice suit in this country.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because somebody
not doing the right job.
Right.
Either the gynecologist didn't take the right specimen at the right time, or the lab missed it.
Right.
Or the women didn't go to see the gynecologist at all.
Right. Yes, all of those possibilities.
Yeah, that's her fault. Okay. So that's the cancer part of it. Okay. This is one message. And the second message is the risk actually is not worth it. When you talk about 2 to 3% of serious adverse reactions.
Yes.
Yeah. After vaccination, and which is a lot. That means about 2,300 girls among 100 vaccinees develop something serious, right? Yeah. That's too much price to pay in order to try to prevent a cervical cancer 40 years long down the road.
Yes.
And we have not seen a single cervical cancer being prevented by HPV vaccine yet.
Okay, well, last question. Do you believe that the vaccine has been proven to prevent cervical cancer?
No, the answer is no.
Okay.
Because it used only a surrogate endpoint for the clinical trial.
Right. Right.
So it never.
It has not been
based
proven.
They're based on some cytological changes which may lead to cervical cancer if you leave it alone.
Yes. So there's a lot of tentative hypotheses and assumptions. Anyway, we have to go. I've run out of time. So I'd just like to thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for letting me here.
Okay. Goodbye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to episode 156 of The Infectious Myth.